HD Smartcast.
You are listening to an HD Smartcast original.
Hello and welcome to season 2 of Dreamers and Unicorns, or HD Smartcast original. Now, this is a show about leadership, talent, culture, skills, and everything that shapes our world of work. In each episode, you will meet a dreamer or a unicorn. So, who is a dreamer? Of course, you know that one. I know you will say that anyone with an unfulfilled dream is a dreamer. But who is a unicorn? Well, you know, think about it like this. A unicorn is the next big thing. Everyone talks about them. You know, they attract admirers and leave us wondering, how do they do it all? They take the road less traveled, and that becomes a source of inspiration to everybody else. In this podcast, I want to acknowledge and thank our knowledge partners, the Society for Human Resources Management, which is the voice of everything which is important in the world of work. Our other knowledge partner is TAGGD, that is TAGGD, a digital-ready platform that makes talent acquisition on demand a reality. And me, I am Abhijit Bhadri. I work with organizations and leaders on their leadership, talent, and culture. This is just the subject of a book that I've recently written, which is called Dreamers and Unicorns. I also coach individuals who are navigating shifts in their career. Transitions are often points in time when people are lonely, the problems are complex, the stakeholders are many, and the stakes are really high. Hello, everyone. Today, I am going to introduce you to a juggler. That's right. You know, this is, you may have met many people who do many different things, but I've never, apart from actually being in a circus, I've never ever seen somebody who juggles so effortlessly. He juggles not just the usual juggling objects, but also he juggles many passions. You know, I would say that he's moved from coaching, to quote the person himself, and that, you know, he also has a very, very distinguished career in terms of the fact that he's got an MBA from IIM Ahmedabad, then went on to work for McKinsey, and worked then for a search firm called Egon Zehnder, and now is one of the very sought-after coaches on what is called transition coaching. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to the host of the very well-known podcast, Play to Potential, my friend Deepak Jayaraman. Deepak, welcome to Dreamers and Unicorns Season 2.
Thank you, Abhijit, for the very kind words and for the wonderful introduction and for the reminder that the life is a circus.
Really, you know, life is a circus. And this is, you know, I always think that this is my opportunity to pay you back in the same coin, so to say, that, you know, when you started Play to Potential, the podcast, I was one of your early guests, and I think it was the 7th episode or something which I did. And I'm just so thrilled with, you know, just being in that galaxy of superstars that you've got later on, all the who's who. I just feel very privileged to have been one of the early writers of that, you know. But if you were to describe yourself in a Twitter bio format, how would you say, what do you do?
First of all, thank you for having me on your show, Abhijit. Honored, indeed. Twitter bio, I would say I help people play to their unique potential by working with them closely through periods of high-stakes transition, whether it's a role transition, a leadership transition, or a career transition.
Explain to me, what's the difference, you know, if you say leadership transition, career transition, what is it? How would that clarify? And maybe if you could start with your own transitions.
Sure.
And if you then it becomes easy for me to then build on.
Of course. So maybe just to provide a little bit of a context around where I come from the South, as my name indicates. My father was a public sector banker. Initial years in small towns in Tamil Nadu, 4 years in a town called Gwalior, sandwiched between Agra and Jhansi. I think 9th onwards, I was in Chennai. My parents said, we need to pitch our tent in a metro for the education to stabilize. And I'm very grateful for that choice they made. From there on, peer pressure took me from the school to IIT Madras to IMA. And then I wanted to solve tough problems, got a chance to work with KPMG Consulting in the UK and in India, wanted to pursue a global career. Went to London Business School. Post that, I got a chance to work with McKinsey in the US. I would say the first big transition, if I may use the term, happened around 2008 when I was at McKinsey in the US. I got a call from India saying my father was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. So I had to come back and take care of his treatment. And the reason I mention it, Abhijit, is till then I would probably say I was leading a reasonably skills-based approach to life, saying these are the skills I have, where can I deploy them? That's possibly the first time I reflected a little deeper on what gave me energy. And somehow I didn't quite find the language for it, but I felt the people side of things was something that I felt I had a strength in and I was gravitating towards. So one of my colleagues at McKinsey, a gentleman called Ramesh Mangaleshwaran, actually nudged me to say, have you thought about search? You might find that interesting. So I met the people at Egonzender, liked them. I didn't know much about what search was, but somehow I said, these people are smart. They could have done a lot of other things. If they're enjoying search at Egonzender, then this must be an interesting profession. So joined on that basis. And I had a very good 6 years in the firm. And I grew a lot, learned a lot about leadership, learned a lot about myself. But I think the second transition for me was realizing that I got my energy from helping people and less from judging people. And somehow when I looked at the typical day I had as a search consultant, I felt 60-70% of the time was having judging conversations because search consultants are paid to form an informed opinion about candidates in the context of a leadership role. And could I do that? Yes, but it wasn't giving me energy. And to your point about poaching to coaching, that's when I felt I should move towards doing something where I spent a majority of time helping people. That was context number one. And context number two was I'd had my second child and I was sort of looking for a little more control over the pace of my life about 4 or 5 years back.
Right.
So that took me from Egonzender to what I do now. I branched out on my own because I said, my race, my pace. I can only control my pace if I'm on my own. I realized that if I'm a part of a partnership, then the pace is set by the partnership because they will say you need to bring in X dollars of revenue, understandably, for being on the platform. So that's when I moved out to what I do now, which is advisory around these three themes. As I said, just to expand, one transition is in a company where a CXO becomes a CEO or a functional head becomes a general manager. Often you need to build new muscle, break old habits, and so on. That's context number one. Second is when a new leader comes on board. Often, as you would appreciate, it's in a lot of situations, not to stereotype it with gender, but it's often a SaaS Bahu situation, just to sort of simplify it. Get proper feedback, expectations are often mismanaged, and there are power centers and so on. Third is career transition, where I felt as a search consultant, you know, I was busy solving the organizational need of around hiring, but as I was talking to some of these leaders, I felt they were quite lonely. They didn't have a sounding board to help them think through what next. So I said, maybe there's an opportunity for me to help them with the where to go question. Again, when I thought about the strategy framework, companies need to be coherent about where to play, how to win. I felt that sort of translates quite nicely to where to go and how to grow. First, you need to figure out what's the direction you want to go. And then having made the choice, you say, what are the capabilities you want to build? So that's a transition coaching where I work with leaders and provide some thought starters and clarity around where to go. And then also help them with go-to-market with it, sort of introductions to the search consultants, given the relationships. So that's sort of the advisory. The podcast is a sort of a long-term labor of love, as you know, of speaking to people like yourselves who have a distinctive point of view on leadership transitions and careers. Those are the three themes I'm trying to stay loyal to in the podcast. So that's my journey.
Brilliant. In Dreamers and Unicorns, we are sort of really saying that leadership, talent, and culture are the three drivers of growth. And of course, we talk about career success and all the good stuff here. You know, when you think about this transition that you talked about, in my mind, there are two kinds of transitions. Sometimes the transition is something that you voluntarily created. You know, in your example, you decided to leave a certain role in US and then come back because of a family circumstance. And then you sort of did that. You also talked about a scenario where you found that there were things which you found more energizing. So these are voluntary ones. But then in today's day and age, in the situation that we all live in, there are also involuntary transitions. So the company that you're working for, it shuts down. It gets acquired and they lay you off. Or, you know, you have a performance issue with the your organization in the role that you're doing. And you may have grown really well for the first couple of years. And then in this particular role, you are struggling. All those things are transition points, so voluntary as well as involuntary.
Mm-hmm.
Where does coaching help a little more, you would say? What would you say that is it voluntary things which matter? Are you more prepared to be coached, or what's been the experience?
Sure. The one thing I've realized, Abhijit, is sometimes transitions take time. And if it's voluntary, then somehow people are able to marinate in some of these thoughts for a while and get to a better place. Because the more time I spend in the space, I realize that it's organic and takes time rather than a step change, you know, especially as you go more and more senior. So to that extent, a lot of my work happens in voluntary situations where people reach out saying, I want to be proactive in terms of how I think about the next 5, 10, 15 years of my life, and therefore I'd like a sounding board. But conceptually, I would say when it's involuntary, sometimes, you want a quick answer, but a lot of the homework should have been done 12 months earlier, right? Because it's often one of my first bosses actually told me something very simple but quite profound, which has stayed with me. He said, it's not important to be employed. It's important to be employable at every stage of your life. Mm-hmm. How that phrase stuck with me, even today, given the fast changing pace of the world, you know, the job might exist, might not exist, but are we investing in ourselves enough to stay nimble, number one? And number two, are we investing in networks enough, in terms, and that could be a combination of, are we building a personal brand? Are we building relationships in the ecosystem? And sometimes by the time people have to face with an involuntary transition, some of these things take time. You can't turn on a switch to turn on your networks. It's a matter of years of background and work. So that's the reason why I feel sometimes it can be tricky. You might find a job, but if it means finding a job that's a good fit along multiple dimensions, in general, I would say give it the time and sort of be thoughtful about it. That's been my experience in this.
We are all going to be working much longer. We are all living long lives. And therefore, our careers are going to stretch much more than what it has been for people in the previous generations. Career transitions can be of two kinds. One, which is voluntary, which is when you make the change by yourself. And this is typically a place where you have had more time to prep for it. Or it can be involuntary. The circumstances forces you to change an industry. It can force you to change your profession. You also go through a life change, which sort of places a certain kind of restrictions. For example, sometimes people say that, because of the family responsibilities, they are unable to take up another profession, an alternative option, a career choice, a new job, all of that. So these are moments where you need to ask yourself, what kind of a job would I want to do where I feel energized? Because it's not so much about skills, which is what most people tend to think of, but it's also about finding the energy to be able to do something different. So when you say that a job is a good fit, is the indication that you feel more energized when you do the job? Is that because you also did mention that, you found that one of the ways in which you found your own transition points was when you were in touch with the kind of energy that you feel in doing something versus the other, that you found when you are in judging conversations, you feel less energized when you are helping people and coaching people. And that's what sort of triggered your journey towards this. So is that a good measure to find out that, this is probably something that I should trigger the transition myself? And if you made up that point that, okay, I'm in a role where I think I need to do something different, how do you find what do you need to do something different? Because a lot of people, say that I found out only when I did something, I say, I don't like this. So for many people, discovering that they don't like something is the way that they eventually stumble through what they like. And sometimes they don't find it. What is a more smarter way to do that?
Couple of thoughts here, Abhijit. Actually, I might borrow from one of the things you said in my podcast many moons back. I remember asking you the question as I was wrapping up the podcast, what do you think about the term play to potential? What's your advice for people to play to potential? I still vividly remember asking that question. And you said the answer lies in the way you frame the title. You can't work to your potential, you can play to your potential. And I think that I hadn't quite thought about it till you pointed it out to me. And I think therein lies a clue. I feel I would have to confess 10 years back, I probably wouldn't have appreciated the the profound nature of this advice, but genuinely, there are situations in time where things feel like play. Or to put it differently, things that we would do anyway, even if nobody paid us. And let me give you an example, right? I was the kid that would take decent notes in class, whose notes would get photocopied a day before the exam. I mean, not top the class, but I took good notes, you know?
Gosh, you were that person, is it?
I got the right, you get the right input, the outputs, you know, you never know. But
Just being modest, Deepak, for a stellar career like that, I mean, just being modest. Okay, go ahead, tell me.
The reason I mention it is, subsequently, even when I read books, for example, I realized that I was getting into the habit of synthesizing books into, let's say, if there's a 7-page HBR article, I would synthesize it into 1 page. If it's a 300-page book, I would synthesize it into 10 pages, sort of format it nicely and share it with people as and when appropriate. And I would like
to be on that mailing list if you are still doing it, I would love to be.
It's a repository of a few things. I can send it across. I'm not systematically mailing it out, but it's something that I do and I share it on a need basis. Or when I learned juggling, I realized that 20 years back, I remember going up to a guy who used to shoot Shadi Ka videos and saying, I want to make a CD for kids to learn juggling. Can you make it? And he, usko pehle, I had to explain what is juggling. And for him, who was used to shooting, Shadi videos, it was like something that he couldn't even fathom. So I remember going to Andheri in 2001 and getting that CD made, juggling 101, and then sort of cutting it and then giving it to a few people. I guess the point I'm making is I felt there was this kida of learning and sharing,
right,
which was there. In a way, that was sort of the route for me to start the podcast. I said, I feel I'm a decent learner and I feel I'm a decent synthesizer. Is there a way I can sort of add that to the mix of what I do? So in a way, that coupled with a book that I read called A Curious Mind by a Hollywood producer called Brian Grazer, who's written a book about the benefits of curiosity and having diverse conversations, somehow today podcast, a lot of people ask me, how do you monetize it? What's the business case? I do it just for the learning and just for kicks, to be candid. Of course, I want people to learn from it, and hopefully it's of value to people who listen. But it didn't come up from a place of, oh, podcasting is big, there's an opportunity, let me dive in and make something out of it. So I guess it's a long-winded answer. I feel there is something, as we reflect on the various things we do, I go back to Egon Zehnder, the penny drop moment was when my office manager said, what were the 2-3 high points in your last year? A good search consultant would have said, when I placed this CEO in this company. I remember telling him when I had this chat with the CEO, and that person wrote me back 2 weeks later saying that chat changed my life. He said, that's fantastic, but that's not necessarily good for business. That's not how search consultants make money. But I realized that I was getting energy from the peripheries of search, not from the sort of the bread and butter of search. So to your point, I feel if we reflect on the various things we do, there might be pockets which we enjoy and which we would do anyway, even if nobody paid us money, where it doesn't feel like work. That's the one cue I would have on, what to look for. But the other piece you mentioned is also a profound one, Abhijit. The other thing I've realized in transitions, this goes back to what I learned from one of the people I spoke to, a lady called Herminia Ibarra at London Business School. She uses the phrase, you can act your way into a new way of thinking, but you can't think your way into a new way of acting. So the crux of what she says is, you need to try different things and then figure out what makes sense. Because as they say in Hindi, right, jo dikhta hai, wo hai nahi, wo jo hai, wo dikhta nahi hai. So unless you've experienced it, it's really what you think it is might be very different from what it is. So the example you gave of somebody having negative clarity to say, I tried it, that doesn't make sense for me, I think it's a great way to go. And Steve Jobs often has the wisdom for a lot of these things, right? Keep looking. There is something to be said about crafting experiments and seeing, does it feel like play? Is there a market there? It's a combination of course, multiple factors, including, is there a revenue opportunity? Does it give you energy? Does it fit the portfolio? But those would be the two big points I would leave you with. Look for play and do experiments.
When I was a guest on Deepak's podcast, Deepak asked me what the word play to potential meant. And I said that you can only play to your potential. You cannot work to your potential. But what does that really mean? Market shapers very often take a path which is the road less traveled, and therefore market shapers continue to stay dreamers. They are not afraid of taking risks. They are unafraid of being unsure. Because a dreamer is really a person who is not quite sure always about how to make that dream a reality. They are still trying to find the path, because once you find that fit, you are really on the growth path. So try it out, explore, and stay an explorer throughout your career. That is one way in which you can play to your potential and discover things that you never thought you could possibly do. Yeah, I think, I like that whole, framework, that look for play, because I think the first thing that I would discover is, in my own case, I kind of thought that, okay, I'm doing human resources, and then from there, within that, I tried generalist roles, I tried specialist roles in various parts of HR. And then you suddenly discover that there is one part which you like a lot more. And then it gets reinforced. In my case, I found that the core thing which I really enjoyed was being able to simplify something, a bit like your note-taking option. So I just found that I used to doodle out these things. Because for me, I'm very much of a, I would take notes by these doodles. And sometimes, those were interesting for me too, because the time that you spent doodling, you're also thinking about that particular piece that you're writing. So if you're writing, let's say, the word reflection, and you're putting it in some fancy font, you're spending that much of time actually reflecting on that word itself, and that sort of stays much better. So that was my little hack on discovering what I really enjoyed doing. And when you say that, this is how you can grow in a profession, how do you sort of look at that? What are some of the things which are the non-obvious things? And you've spoken to so many people in your podcast, and by the way, I'm a big fan of that, So what are some of the things that you've seen people give us a few examples from some of your guests who said something which, so hopefully many of our listeners can relate to at least one of those.
In terms of growth, I feel new experiences, Abhijit. Sometimes I feel, especially in India, given the nature of education a lot of us have been through, we often overemphasize the growth here. But I'm beginning to value more and more some sort of a holistic growth. And sometimes I feel the lessons might come from a very different place. For me personally, every Sunday morning I take a guitar lesson for an hour from a teacher. I've been doing that for the last few years. And I realize that the way he teaches me in a lot of ways informs the way I approach my coaching work with clients. And the reason I say it is, he would give me a song to practice. I would practice it. And he would say, your fingers need to move this way. And I would show it to him, and he would actually say, your thumb is in the wrong place, And that's something that I wouldn't have, that feedback would lie in my blind spot, And right. I realize that in the coaching work I do, sometimes I realize that leaders will be focusing on A, B, C, D, E, but maybe the unlock might be F, which is something else. So right. I realized that somehow earlier I felt I was a little more unidimensional in the way I thought about learning and growing myself. I'm slowly beginning to appreciate learning that could come from other forms. It could be the arts, it could be hobbies, it could be just nature, it could be ecology. So I'm still early in that pursuit. But if there's one thing I've learned, I think it's to value the interconnectedness of the various disciplines and to be open to learning and just sort of leave some room for reflection. And the other piece I've realized, to the point you make, if there's one thing that stood out for me from several people I've spoken to on the podcast, I think some of the most accomplished leaders had some sort of a reflection practice. It could be journaling in some cases. For example, Vinay Sitapati, one of the authors, spoke about how Narasimha Rao used to write a journal that would give him the ability to deal with complexity. A few other leaders spoke about mindfulness practice. So I feel if I had to sort of talk about a couple of themes, one is being open to experiences outside of the specific realm of wherever you're trying to grow, because they're all interconnected. And second is leaving room for reflection/marination for some of those to come in and inform your perspective.
We all have blind spots. I certainly have plenty of them. And for me, the ability to get feedback through my work is one of the ways in which I can overcome the blind spots that I have. But you know, a hobby can be a phenomenal way in which you can develop yourself, because it gives you a safe space in which you can grow, you can try out different things, you can experiment. A good teacher will often tell you that do not think about the end game, do not think about the results, but think about what that experience means to you. As long as you enjoy the experience, you will feel energized, and that is a much better way to think about your career transitions. I find that writing a gratitude diary, you know, a simple place where I write down periodically, and I try to do it every couple of days, if not twice or thrice a week, I try to write down the things that I'm really grateful for in my life. When you work with many different people, do you have like a set way in which you operate? Is there a format in which you coach people? Sure. What is your method?
Sure. I must say it's quite contextual, but typically for a lot of these situations, I've realized, Abhijit, that at very senior levels, at leadership levels, I'm beginning to realize the biggest unlock often is self-awareness, is in ensuring that, you know, they're able to see themselves in high definition, right? Sometimes we see ourselves, but the mirror is a little foggy. And this is something I learned from one of my guests, a lady called Tasha Urich. She's a researcher on self-awareness, and she uses the term internal self-awareness versus external self-awareness. And she says we might have a view of ourselves through meditation, through reflection, and through our own stories. But she said that my research says that how the world sees us and how we see ourselves often can be orthogonal. You know, people might see us in ways that we don't anticipate. And to me, to your point about the process, I typically try and over-index on building that self-awareness, number one. And number two, also try and ensure that that self-awareness, that external self-awareness, is not limited to the world of work. I realize that sometimes, you know, the question I often flippantly ask sometimes is, how 360 is your 360? Because, you know, the five people around you at work still only represent a narrow sliver of the world you interact with. You know, if you throw in your spouse, your sibling, your business partners, other clients. So I try and get a healthy cross-section across the different domains of the leader's life and try and show the mirror. And then from then on, depending on the nature of the context, if it's a career transition, then it gets into a little bit of, therefore, what's your sweet spot discussion. If it's a leader in a situation that's trying to get better, then it's a little more of a, how do we bring this, what behaviors do we work on? So I think the application of the showing the mirror varies from case to case, but in most situations, I start with a equivalent of a comprehensive health checkup.
I think that's beautifully put, you know, internal awareness and external awareness. You know, when I look at some of the work that I do in similar space, what I find useful is to describe it as what you think of yourself, you know, is the actor's point of view. Mm-hmm. You know, imagine you're on stage as an actor. You have a view of the character that you are playing.
Right.
And you might have a view of how well or how badly you played it. And then you have the audience point of view. So the audience actually looks at you and they also have a point of view about whether you did something well or not. Right. So I think the reconciliation of this provides you a great opportunity for improvement. How do you keep different things? Like, I know that you are into juggling. You play the guitar really well. I've heard you sing. Do you think that things which you don't monetize, things which you don't have a transactional outcome, ROI kind of model, is that really the secret to being happy at what you are doing? Successful is different. Success is, you know, defined by others. Happiness is defined by you. So, would you think that?
I would say for me, I feel the switch probably happened when I got in a sense it's a journey. But I feel one big shift for me was when I had some sense of how much is enough. You know, somehow I feel coming from a middle class background, there is an implicit assumption we make around more is better. But I think a lot of us, we get to a point where more may not be better. For example, you know, the thought experiment I urge people to do sometimes is, if you have to work 100 hours, just to pick numbers, right? If you have to work 100 hours a week and somebody pays you one CR, versus if you have to work 50 hours a week and somebody pays you 50 L, just to take half the time, half the money.
Sure.
But sometimes we implicitly assume that more money, therefore, better life. But there is a price we pay sometimes for the extra money we earn because of the extra intensity. There is a family cost, there's a health cost, there are other costs. So somehow, you know, if I were to get mathematical, I feel moving from a optimizing mindset to a harmonizing mindset has helped me. I feel right now I'm less concerned about, am I getting the most ROI from this investment? As long as I'm sort of crossing a threshold and I'm not sort of frittering away time, I feel if there is a, I mean, the other framework that's helped me is one of my podcast guests again, Stuart Friedman of Wharton. He uses the four domains: self, work, home, and community. He says all of us need to find a way of figuring out how we want our portfolio to be and ensure that our actions are in line with what we care about. So there's some time for self, which is whether it's meditation or hobbies, some time with family, enough time at work, and also taking care of the community. So I think having that little bit of that holistic approach has definitely helped me to be a little happier than I was maybe 5 years back.
Well, thank you very much for sharing all those nuggets of wisdom, Deepak. And if people want to find you, where do they find you? What is the place? Tell us about your website, your social handles.
Sure. Podcast that I run can be found at playtopotential.com. It's just playtopotential.com. Twitter, I'm at DPAKJRAMAN. My full name was not available when I showed up at Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn as well. I'm not on Insta and some of the other platforms. There's a lot I can learn on how to manage my profile from you. Maybe that's a separate conversation, Abhijit. But those would be the 2-3 places where people could find me.
Thank you very much. Well, in conclusion, one of the ways that we can manage our transitions could be to leverage something which does not really have a great amount of return on investment. Things which do not really have an end game. A hobby. A hobby is a fantastic way in which you can discover what you are passionate about. I discovered a number of things that today I do on a far more regular basis. For example, my drawing or my writing, which I really took up as hobbies, which I didn't really have anything planned in my mind. These opportunities came up much later. So stay focused on the craft, and until we come back to talk to another guest next week, stay curious and drop me a line and stay connected. So don't forget to tune in every Wednesday. Dreamers and Unicorns 2.0 has been produced by HT Smartcast. To give it a listen, log on to htsmartcast.com. Or haan, are suniye zara naye nazariye se. Kya? फिर मिलते हैं जल्दी.
दिस वॉज एन HT Smartcast ओरिजिनल.
HT Smartcast.